In this episode of Rendition, Clever Is as Clever Does. This is Rendition, a modern retelling of timeless stories. Each week, you'll hear a medley of folk tales, ancient parables, and classic short fiction. We'll take this tour through folklore, literature, and the arts to reveal the fundamental themes that are still being reused today. Because the world has changed, but the human story remains the same.
Did you know there are more people with genius IQs living in China than there are people of any kind living in the United States?
That can't possibly be true.
It is.
Who would account for that?
Well, first, an awful lot of people live in China, but here's my question. How do you distinguish yourself in a population of people who all got 1600 on their SATs?
I didn't know they take SATs in China.
They don't. I wasn't talking about China anymore. I was talking about me.
You got a 1600?
Yes. I could sing.
Those are the first few lines of the movie The Social Network. You know, the Facebook movie. Yes, it's true. Mark Zuckerberg did get a perfect score on his SATs. The guy was pretty much a child genius. But, as the movie goes on to show, his book smarts rarely translated into street smarts, or emotional intelligence for that matter. I've always marveled at how some kids seem to be born with a skill for maneuvering in the world. Others, however, even within the same family, need some extra time to learn the ropes. In this episode, we'll hear two ancient stories about brilliant young people. In the first, we'll hear the story of three brothers who were groomed for greatness through their education. The second story has a young guy who picks up a profession and is a natural from day one. Then, at the end, we'll dig into the possible reasons why these stories have survived the test of time. So, let's move right along to the first story. It comes by way of Persia, and it seems to be loosely based on the life of a king from that region who ruled in the 5th century. Some details of the story are added in from previous folk tales, so keep that in mind, but this first story is called The Three Princes of Serendipo. In ancient times, there existed in the country of Serendipo, in the Far East, a great and powerful king by the name of Jafar. He had three sons who he loved very much. And being a good father and very concerned about their education, he decided that it was his duty to provide them with the best education possible for princes. So begins the fascinating story of the three princes of Serendip. In order to provide the best tutors for his sons, the king travels throughout the island until he finds a number of scholars, each specialized in a different field, and to them he entrusted the training of his sons. They soon became highly trained in the arts and sciences. However, when the tutors inform the king of his son's achievements, he is skeptical. So he calls for the oldest son and announces that he wishes to retire to a monastery and that his son should succeed him as ruler. The oldest son politely refuses, insisting that his father is wiser and should reign until his death. The two younger sons also refuse when commanded to take the throne. Although the king is astonished by the wisdom displayed by his sons, he decides that they should have real-life experience also, not just book smarts. So his plan is to send them on a long journey where they will have to fend for themselves. He summons his sons, and, giving the impression of being angry and disappointed because they have all disobeyed him, banishes them from Serendip. They left the kingdom and started their journey, soon ending up in the kingdom of a great and powerful emperor named Baramo. The princes run into trouble when a camel driver stops them on the road and asks them if they have seen one of his camels. Although they have not, they have noticed signs that suggest a camel has indeed passed along the road. Always ready to dazzle with their wit and education, the princes mystify the camel driver by asking him if the lost camel is blind in one eye, missing a tooth, and lame in one leg. The camel driver, impressed by the accuracy of the description, immediately hurries off in pursuit of the animal. After not finding the camel, and feeling like they yanked his chain, he returns to the princes, who reassure him by supplying further information. The camel, they say, carried a load of butter on one side and honey on the other, and was ridden by a pregnant woman. This description was so accurate that the camel rider assumes that the princes have stolen the camel, and he has them imprisoned. Luckily, shortly after, the camel rider's neighbor finds the camel, and then the princes are released. The princes are brought before Emperor Baramo, who asks them how they could give such an accurate description of a camel that they had never seen. Here, it becomes clear that they had brilliantly interpreted the small amounts of evidence observed along the road. Since the grass had been eaten on one side of the road where it was less green, the princes correctly guessed that the camel was blind to the other side. And because there were lumps of chewed grass on the road the size of a camel's tooth, presumably they had fallen through a gap left by a missing tooth. The tracks showed the prints of only 3 feet, the fourth being dragged, indicating that the animal was lame. They knew butter was carried on one side of the camel and honey on the other because ants had been attracted to melted butter on one side of the road and flies to spilled honey on the other. Their guess regarding the pregnant rider is a bit more complicated than the rest and a bit crude. The second prince described it this way. I guessed that the camel must have carried a woman because I had noticed that near the tracks where the animal had knelt down, the imprint of a foot was visible, and some urine was nearby. I dabbed my finger in it, and when I smelled it, I felt a certain lustfulness, which convinced me that the imprint was of a woman's foot. The third brother now jumped in. I guessed that the same woman must have been pregnant, because I had noticed nearby handprints which signaled that the woman, being pregnant, had helped herself up with her hands while urinating. Emperor Baramo is so astounded by the prince's skills in the matter of the missing camel that he invites them to be his personal advisors and sends them off on adventures to help out the kingdom. When the princes return from their adventures, they learn of the catastrophe that has come down on the emperor since they left. Baramo fell in love with a beautiful slave girl called Dilarama, who one day questioned his honor in public. In a fit of rage, he had her bound and abandoned in a forest. The next day, Baramo regret his actions and ordered a search for her. No trace of her was found, however, leaving Baramo ill with sorrow. Witnessing the emperor's suffering, the princes advise him to build 7 beautiful palaces and to reside in each one for a week. In addition, the best storyteller in each of the 7 most important cities of the empire is to be brought into his royal presence to recount a marvelous story. Over the weeks, in his various palaces, Baramo listens with appreciation to 6 of the stories, his health steadily improving. While listening to the 7th story, about a ruler who rejects his lover, Baramo suddenly realizes that it concerns Dilarama and himself. On being questioned, the storyteller reveals that he knows Dilarama and that he is searching for her lover to tell him that she still loves him despite his act of cruelty. Overjoyed, Baramo sends for Dilarama, and they are reunited. Baramo asks the three princes how they conceived such an effective remedy. They tell him they recommended 7 different palaces to be built so that variety might cure the root of his illness, insomnia. As no trace of Dilarama had been found in the forest, they refused to believe that wild animals had eaten her. Therefore, they suggested that storytellers be summoned from far away in case news of her might be received. As Dilarama had been discovered in the forest by a traveling merchant who took her far away, their strategy turned out to be precisely correct. The princes return to Serendip, and the story ends with the three wise sons of King Jafar becoming three wise rulers. Upon Jafar's death, the eldest son succeeds his father as king of Serendip. The middle son returns to the land of the Virgin Queen whom they had helped. He marries her and becomes king. Emperor Baramo, who has a daughter, sends for the youngest son and offers her hand in marriage. Soon after the wedding, Baramo dies, and his son-in-law becomes lord of his empire. The story you just heard is very influential, and for good reason. It's the first folktale to have characters use a sophisticated form of reasoning to solve a case. It's like forensics, detective work, and paleontology, before those things were even given a name. So I guess you could call this the pilot episode of CSI. No, but seriously. This story influenced another story called Zadig, which in turn influenced the first modern detective story by Edgar Allan Poe. We can then follow that influence over to the character of Sherlock Holmes, and then up to the most talented of all fictional detectives, Velma from Scooby-Doo. In this next story, the character isn't a detective, but someone with a more shady profession. He's a peasant, so he doesn't receive a formal education. He just happens to be a natural at what he does. This story is from Norway, and it was first put in writing in the mid-1800s. Later, the Brothers Grimm also included a variation of it in their collection. Let's listen to that story. It's called The Master Thief. A poor villager had nothing to give his three sons, so he walked with them to a crossroad, where each son took a different road. The youngest went into a great wooded area, and a storm struck, so he sought shelter in a house. The old woman there warned him that it is a house inhabited by robbers, but he stayed, and when the robbers arrived, he persuaded them to take him on as a servant. But he first had to prove himself as an apprentice robber, so they gave him a test. He had to steal an ox that a man was going to bring to market to sell. The son found in the house a shoe with a silver buckle and used it for his plan. His plan was he put the shoe in the middle of the road and hid behind a bush. The man who was guiding his ox saw it and thought it would be good if only he had the other shoe. So he left it right there and just kept going. Afterwards, the son took the shoe and ran through a shortcut to leave it on the road ahead of the man again. The man, now realizing that he could have the complete pair, tied up his ox and went back to look for the other shoe. Of course, the man didn't find this second shoe, and was very angry when he saw that someone had stolen his ox. The man went back to get a second ox to sell it, and the robbers told the son that if he stole that one as well, they would accept him as a full-fledged robber, the son took a piece of rope, tied it to a tree by the road, and pretended to be a hung body. The man saw this body hanging, thought about how sad it was, but kept going. Then the son ran ahead and hung himself again, with the man seeing it and continuing to walk by with his ox. Then the son did it again for a third time, until the man was half convinced that it was witchcraft. He tied the ox to the side of the road and went back to see if the first two bodies were still hanging. Then the son got away with the animal. The man went back home for his third and last ox to sell, and the robbers told the son that they would make him the group's leader if he stole this third ox. The son went to the woods, and as the man was passing by, made a sound like an ox bellowing in the woods. Then the man, thinking it was his stolen oxen, ran off, leaving the third behind, and then the son stole that one as well. The robbers were not pleased at all that the son was now their leader, and so they all left him. As payback, the son released the oxen, so they returned to their owner. He took all the treasure in the house and returned to his father. When he returned to his father, he decided to marry the daughter of the local governor and sent his father to ask for her hand, telling him to tell the governor that he was a master thief. The governor laughed and then agreed if the son could steal the roasted ham from his dinner on Sunday. To hatch this plan, the son caught three rabbits, and then he released them one by one near the governor's kitchen on Sunday. The people there, thinking it was the same rabbit just going in circles, went out to catch it. And then the son got in and stole the roast. The priest made fun of the governor for being tricked. And when the master thief came to claim his reward, the governor asked him to prove his skill once again by playing some trick on the priest. The master thief dressed up as an angel and convinced the priest that he had come to take him to heaven. He then dragged the priest over stones and thorns and threw him into the goose house, telling him it was purgatory. And then he stole all the valuables from the priest. The governor was pleased, but went back on his promise a couple more times, giving the son more stuff to steal. The son succeeded in all of his missions, but then came the most daring test of all. The governor asked the son to steal the sheet off his bed along with the wife's nightgown. This required some real trickery. The master thief made up a dummy to look like a real man, and in the middle of one night, put it at the window of the governor's room. The governor woke up suddenly and saw it and shot at it. And when the thief let the dummy drop, the governor got scared about word getting out that he was a murderer. The governor went outside his house to bury the body. Then the master thief, pretending to be the governor in the dark, got the sheet and the nightgown from the wife with the excuse that they were needed to clean the blood up. The governor decided that he was too afraid of what the thief would steal next and let him marry his daughter. If the story of the three princes was the genesis of the detective tale, this second story you just heard is a big influence on the heist movie genre. I'm talking about movies like Ocean's 11, Inception, and The Italian Job. It's wrong to root for a thief, but the stories set up the characters to seem like the underdog with no other choice. Overall, I think these two stories we've heard today have lasted the test of time because they serve a very specific purpose. Yes, I know they're entertaining, but underneath it all, they also do what stories do best. They teach us a lesson in a way we can remember. Almost as if it were a Trojan horse getting by the guards undetected. The first story taught us that difficult problems are often not caused by a lack of information, but by a lack of observation. I think the second story carries a sister lesson to the first, and that is, never bet against a cunning man or a man with a plan. You might think you're smarter, but ultimately, smarts are only measured by action. After all, clever is as clever does. Gals and guys, thanks so much for tuning in for another episode of Rendition. Your support truly means the world to me. And it's because of your support that I have some great news to share. This past week, we were featured on the front page of Apple Podcasts and the iTunes Store. And the podcast currently ranks as the number three show in the literature category. Again, this is all due to your continued support. If you haven't done so, I ask you to please give us a quick review on Apple Podcasts. It only takes 30 seconds, and it goes a long way towards keeping us ranked high on the charts. Hope to have you back next week for the next episode. You've been listening to Rendition. I'm Alex Cespedes. Thanks for listening.